Hi, this is Amy Halloran here with another Food Diary. I'm really excited to bring you today Justin Nordstrom because he's got an era of radio and food radio to talk about that's pretty exciting. Welcome, Justin.
Hi, Amy. Thanks for having me on the program.
Sure. Thanks for coming. So, Justin, can you tell people about the Aunt Sammy radio program and how you discovered it?
Sure. So the first thing I should say is that Aunt Sammy is a fictional character. She was created like, say, Betty Crocker or Aunt Jemima. She was created in the 20th century, but Aunt Sammy's mission was not specifically to sell products. That was kind of indirect. She was the personification of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. That's the USDA. And they created her as a radio character on a program called Housekeeper's Chat. And the USDA had been creating pamphlets and brochures for years, but people weren't really paying attention to them. So they wanted to use the novel technology of home radio to showcase some of the research that USDA scientists had been doing. And Aunt Sammy is a kind of almost like a soap opera character that tries to tell stories and jokes, but also wants to teach people how to prepare the family meal or how to do their laundry or how to do every household task based on the research of the USDA. So she's kind of a spokesperson for the USDA. And the reason I kind of got interested in this project is that they produced a companion cookbook to go along with her daily radio program. Housekeeper's Chat was on the air in 1926, and the companion book, which is called Aunt Sammy's Radio Recipes, is produced in 1927. And it was hugely popular, even though I had never heard of it. I'd been teaching history for decades, but I'd never heard of this book before. And so that's how I kind of stumbled my way into reading and eventually cooking Aunt Sammy's recipes.
It's such a very intriguing moment of when we look at backwards on it in food, the popularity of food media now, to think that the government saw way back when that this was a way to reach folks is really great.
Sure.
I love it because it takes the home economics, scientification of everyday life into a very casual medium. I love the idea of that. And I love thinking about the way that this character lived. She wasn't like Betty Crocker Betty Crocker was a static image upon boxes and had all these, so she was personified differently. Talk to people about the mechanism of that.
Sure. Well, we technically don't know who Aunt Sammy was, although we would speculate that she is the sister or wife of Uncle Sam, the sort of personification of America. There were real-world people that created this persona, that tested the recipes, and they worked in the USDA offices. So the kind of real-world people behind that character are really interesting. But the fictional persona, she is this sort of chatty, whimsical person. And very much the sort of early radio soap opera person talking about her next door neighbor and saying that there's conflict around the house because one person can't, prepare food right. There's advice on, which clothing will be most flattering or which drapes will look best in my kitchen. But the other thing that I should say about Aunt Sammy is that, the USDA is using one technology, radio, in order to showcase others. And that's a really big part of her role because it's right at the time when new modern cooking techniques, electrical appliances, linoleum flooring and rayon fabric and all of these new products are being made available. And so Aunt Sammy becomes sort of the spokesperson, an ambassador, if you will, for all of these new technologies. She tells people, my next door neighbor got a washing machine and we all sat around watching it. The idea that people would be mesmerized by a washing machine seems ridiculous today, but it was so, unique and special that people were, wanting to hear about it. So that's really the idea that she's taking the word modern and its use throughout the broadcast is means to have new technologies and appliances that would make your life different from your parents or grandparents.
And how were these broadcast? It wasn't one Aunt Sammy broadcasting from DC, right? There was
correct.
A different mechanism.
Well, yes and no. The voice was different depending on the radio station. I don't have any sound recordings, and it really, if any of your listeners have stumbled upon something or found one, I'd be all ears. But I've never found any actual audio recording. But the USDA would create scripts, transcripts, even with stage directions. They would sometimes say, slow down here, or, you know, pause here. And these would be sent out to radio stations throughout the country. And so even though the program was broadcast in hundreds of radio stations all around the country, you could even hear, you know, housekeepers chat in Hawaii and Alaska, the voice is different. And I saw a blog post where someone in a person's family was the Aunt Sammy for a radio station in Springfield, Massachusetts. And she got that job because she was a secretary at the radio station, and there was a pipe organ that usually played at a certain time, and the organ broke. So they used this as a kind of filler, and it was so popular that people asked for it as a daily broadcast, and that's how she got the job. So I don't know beyond that story how people or who was chosen to, you know, play the role of Aunt Sammy throughout the country. But it's this interesting moment in American radio. It's before there is a real syndicated broadcast network, but the USDA is still able to use the technology in written form, just sending out scripts, even though the actual voice would differ from one place to another.
And it sounds like there was quite a lot of commercial representation, so there wasn't any the conflict of interest going on.
Well, I mean, specific product names, companies or manufacturers, those aren't mentioned. No one is saying, oh, come over and take a look at my, you know, Frigidaire refrigerator. But Aunt Sammy is definitely praiseworthy of new technologies in general. And this is part of how I got involved in the project, because, you know, it's part of the USDA's mission to modernize the home. If you've ever heard of the old vaudeville song, How Are You Going to Keep Them Down on the Farm After They've Seen Paris? This reflected a real concern after the First World War of what's going to happen to American soldiers. Are they going to feel discontent with rural life? And the USDA, you might think, well, why is the USDA using radio? What does that have to do with agriculture? Well, the USDA had been using radio for weather reports and farm product reports for years, but this was seen as a way of keeping Americans on the farm and making them feel content with, you know, a sense that they could not be isolated anymore and they could have access to all of the modern technologies and appliances in big cities. And, I mean, ironically, Aunt Sammy is just as popular in towns and cities, but that's why the USDA created this program. It's part of its outreach mission. And that's part of that emphasis on modernization. Your home life could be luxurious. It's kind of analogous to the, you know, flight to suburbia in the mid-20th century. You know, the idea that all of these consumer appliances will make your life different from previous generations.
Right. So they wanted to show the future and make sure everyone was participating in the future.
Sure. Yeah. And of course, there is a, you know, a limit to that. You know, Aunt Sammy is not, she's cooking. And one of the things that's so interesting about her cookbook is it's very accessible today. And that's because of all of this modernity. I mean, Aunt Sammy is speaking for an audience of listeners that they're not going to be growing and harvesting their own food, even though it's part of the USDA's, you know, programming. She's speaking to an audience of people that, you know, are going to go to the grocery store and buy products and get them on the table in a hurry. And so that makes her feel kind of relatable today. You know, one of the things that people ask about this book often is, you know, could I use this? And I say, absolutely. There's very little in Aunt Sammy's radio recipes from 1927 that would seem out of place today. In fact, the person that reminds me most of Aunt Sammy is Rachel Ray's 30-Minute Meals. You know, the idea of, you know, she has the same concerns, Aunt Sammy does, of getting food on the table, working in a budget. Most of her food is not, you know, aspirational cooking. She's not, you know, generally whipping up masterpieces. She does have a few really impressive dishes to impress guests, but the mainstay of her cookbook is, you know, tried and true meat and potatoes type of food that, you know, was popular in 1927 and I think is still popular today.
That's so awesome because Rachel Ray is from upstate New York, where you are speaking. She's from Lake George, New York. That is a pretty cool tidbit. Now, would anybody be able to look at some of these scripts? Would there be a chance to have a Aunt Sammy's revival? You know, there's so much food media happening and so many people tuning into each other's cooking habits. I think it would be so fun to have not necessarily a podcast, but, you know, something to get this character back in our ears.
Well, the answer is absolutely. So the USDA has Aunt Sammy's radio recipes on its website, and all of the scripts going all the way back to 1926 are available. In my book, I was lucky enough to be able to pick and choose some of these, and I do have a quick excerpt if you wanted me to read it for you. It's the very first time Aunt Sammy's introduced. So here's the way she's introduced. This is from October 4th, 1926. It's her radio debut. This announcer reads this. This morning we are going to introduce Aunt Sammy, the best authority we know on housekeeping. Every day she will chat with you at this time. Ask your neighbors over to meet her. Send your problems to her. Make her your friend and advisor. It is now our pleasure to introduce Aunt Sammy, our official radio representative of the U.S. Bureau of Home Economics at Washington, D.C., and the reason I started there, I could have picked, you know, any number of programs, hundreds of programs, but I start there because it emphasizes right away that, you know, she is authoritative. You know, Aunt Sammy is your official radio representative. She's the best authority we know on housekeeping, but she's also kind of homey. She's your friend. She's your advisor. And I like that line about, you know, invite people your neighbors over to meet her. And I'm picturing in my mind people huddling around a radio. You know, by 1926, there were millions of radios in American homes, but not everyone had one. So the idea would be that, you know, people would show up to a neighbor's house when Housekeeper's Chat was going to be aired. And, you know, I like that idea of it's homey, it's cozy, you're amongst friends, but you're also hearing advice from the government. You're hearing from an official source. And so that blend is clearly the selling point. The reason that this was such a hugely popular phenomenon 90 years ago is that blend of hominess and family, but also, you know, authority and, you know, government's seal of approval.
Remind me the very beginning of radio. So, because this is pretty early in radio days, and you mentioned how it's not commercialized yet. So exactly where in the lineage is it?
Well, in 1926, there are commercial radio stations. So the first... It's difficult to pinpoint exactly when radio becomes a phenomenon. You know, people had known about the technology of radio waves. Scientists had discovered this technology. Radio had been used as a method of military communication in 1914 at the outbreak of the First World War. So people were aware of this, and some hobbyists were, you know, essentially like modern ham radio operators or something, were sending signals. But many people would say that the first radio broadcast was in November of 1920, the announcement that Warren G. Harding was elected president. And that comes out of East Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So many would say, okay, that was the first kind of commercial radio broadcast. That was the first radio station that had its call letters. It would be in November 1920. So this is very early, Housekeeper's Chat. But radio takes off explosively. So by the time Aunt Sammy's on the air, there are, you know, hugely popular phenomenon, and the radio system is in its way. And so by the 1920s, it really becomes a kind of daily phenomenon, was practically unknown at the beginning of the decade, and becomes, you know, commonplace by the end of the decade. Uh-huh. And so this falls right into that early stages of radio production.
And it, to me, it's so curious. I kind of fell in love with cookbook pamphlets a really long time mm-hmm. ago, as they, and then was surprised at their genesis of happening as promotion of products as they came online.
Sure.
People, yep. But then you think about it, people really needed to get introduced to the new cooking technologies. And mm-hmm. so both tools and foods. Some of my favorite pamphlets are for Crisco and Spry, an alternate fat
sure.
that didn't survive. And so that this falls into that lineage of consumer education, I think, mm-hmm. is really curious for people. As how do you think about that progression of things in your writing of your book and in talking about it?
Absolutely. There's a fine line between, you know, marketing, or what we might call product placement, and consumer education. And it's difficult to tell where do you draw that line. You know, I'm familiar with someone who, you know, did similar work on things like baking powder, which we take for granted today, but was such an innovative technology that these newly created companies had to teach people, here's how you use it to make quick breads. Or Crisco, my favorite line from that is, you know, the pitching Crisco to Jewish cooks. You know, the Hebrew race has been waiting for, I think it was like 100 generations for Crisco. So because it's kosher. So it's an interesting example of that. Aunt Sammy is, again, she's not out to pitch a particular product. And in that way, the USDA is able to maintain some objectivity.
Mm-hmm.
But she's pitching, I think, more of an idea. If she's a spokesperson for anything, she's a spokesperson for the idea that American home cooks can be modern. And the way to be a modern home cook is to listen to the advice from the USDA and to, you know, invest in these new consumer technologies. And so, I mean, going back to the popularity of radio, we might today call her early listeners early adopters, you know, to use a modern buzzword. You know, they're early adopters. They've got radios and so forth. So they're the people that are most likely to be the ones buying, you know, an electric waffle iron. But Aunt Sammy's recipes have to say, hey, when you make breakfast with your new waffle iron, don't skimp on the oil, because, you know, you'll burn that brand new piece of technology you've just gotten. She has to teach people, all right, well, you just bought your first electric iron, congratulations. Well, here's how you use it without burning up your laundry. So, you know, part of what she's doing is exactly what you're describing, taking what could otherwise be intimidating, like new household technologies, and making them feel accessible. You know, you can listen to the USDA and feel like you're in good hands, and that'll make you feel more comfortable, you know, buying all these products.
Such a wild thing, you know. It's easy to think that the olden days were something very separate from what we're living in now. And I wonder how you see Aunt Sammy fitting in with this explosion of food media that has mm-hmm. happened since the Food Network or Julia Child,
yeah.
really, you know, how,
sure.
how does she fit in there? Is there a big gap between Aunt Sammy and Julia Child?
No, not at all. In fact, so her cookbook, Aunt Sammy's Radio Recipes, was re-released, someone probably similar to me, in the 1970s, re-released it. And the a newspaper report that was reviewing that revised edition said that Aunt Sammy was a jazz-age Julia Child, so jazz-age referring to the 1920s. And so, yeah, she is very much a celebrity chef. I started off by comparing her to Betty Crocker because she's fictionalized, and many of the newspaper reports had to remind readers that despite her popularity, Aunt Sammy is not a real person. So that would be a key difference between her and Julia or her and Rachel Ray. But there's still the idea that, you know, cooking is both, you know, an art and a science. And for both, you need mentors. And I think that she puts people at ease and also inspires them to try something they wouldn't otherwise do, whether it's a new recipe or a new piece of technology. And that blend of, you know, putting people at ease and also inspiring them, that's what I always think of when I think of Julia Child. I'm actually from Boston, where she, you know, broadcast her program, and she's an icon of mine, and there's a reason why her kitchen's in the Smithsonian. And I think that, like her, Aunt Sammy is this example of someone who encouraged and inspired people, and that's why she was so popular.
And how did you run into her?
Mm-hmm. Well, I started off by researching the First World War. So we're commemorating the centennial of that right now. And I researched what mobilization was like for Americans. American soldiers were only involved in World War I for about a year. And the U.S. contributes, in terms of money and food, much, much longer from the very outbreak of the war. So the USDA was hugely involved in the First World War. Herbert Hoover, who'll go on to be president, his early start in public life was organizing food for both military and civilians. So I researched that. I'd written a lot about the slogan, "Food will win the war." But I wondered what happened next. You know, how does the USDA, which was tremendously popular, what does it do as an agency once the armistice is declared in 1918? And so this was the next step, because the USDA has to kind of reinvent itself. And it's now not about, you know, promoting food for wartime use. It's now trying to modernize the American home. And in that way, it tries to maintain a presence in public life, and it sees its new post-war mission as, you know, contributing to the American home. So we go from home front to individuals' homes. That's kind of the transformation that happens, and that's how I stumbled upon Aunt Sammy.
That's really, really wild. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sometimes you might have an impression of history, or certainly history of the government, being very musty, fusty stuff. But this is really exciting. And
thank you. So
tell people about your book and where they can find it.
So it's on Amazon or any place you buy books. Mm-hmm. It's published from the University of Arkansas Press. And the title is Aunt Sammy's Radio Recipes, the original 1927 cookbook. And that's the companion book to this radio program we've been talking about. The book itself is the cookbook, because I wanted it to be useful. And it contains all of the recipes, but it also contains a lot of excerpts and editor's notes based on the radio broadcast. So what I try to do is put the two together. Full disclosure, you can find Aunt Sammy's radio recipes online, but you're only going to get her recipes. And the analogy that I would make there is, you'll get a list of ingredients and some cooking times. And it would be like reading Shakespeare by reading the Cliff Notes. You know, you'll get a list of characters and scenes, but you'll miss all of the beautiful turns of phrase and all of the, you know, different wordplay that makes Shakespeare worth reading. And that's what you're going to get if you just look at the, you know, USDA's cookbook. Because what it was, it was not a standalone document. It was meant to be a kind of follow-up before people could record these radio programs. And so you didn't have to stand around in your kitchen and scribble down cooking times or remember, you know, the day after the broadcast, you know, how much of different ingredients you're supposed to use to make a cake. So what I've tried to do in my book is bring together the transcripts of the radio program and combine them with the list of recipes, so that, you know, readers of the book could have both. You could have all of the stories of Aunt Sammy, and you could also have a useful cookbook that would remind you of how people cooked 90 years ago.
And get that voice into your head.
That's right.
Yeah, because there was no one Aunt Sammy anyway, so you could read it around the table. You could start your own podcast. We could have a competition.
I think that's exactly right.
We could have a Rachel Ray-sponsored competition for the Jazz Age Julia Child read-off.
I like that. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So, Justin Nordstrom, thank you so much for speaking with me about this hidden gem of radio.
Thank you, Amy. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Sure. This has been Amy Halloran with another Food Diary.